It's Helping Hand, weekly feature airing statewide on HPR1 stations as part of All Things Considered and then archived at hawaiipublicradio.org. That's where all of our Helping Hand segments can be found and heard. Friday's Helping Hand connects with an organization, event, or topic that offers assistance to people with disabilities and others among the most vulnerable. I'm Dave Lawrence. Thank you very much for joining us. This week, it's a real honor to be welcoming back my friends from the National Federation of the Blind of Hawaii. NFB is, just as its name implies, a national organization, and the NFB of Hawaii, members of our local community who are blind, speaking for themselves, advocating on behalf of the blind, those with vision challenges, and doing so both locally and then through the organization on a national level, too. On the local level, they've got an upcoming local state convention, September 28th, 29th, and 30th in Honolulu, 1901 Bachelot Street, the auditorium of Ho'opono, which is services for the blind. And we'll hear more about that and their relationship to the organization as we welcome back National Federation of the Blind of Hawaii's Virgil Stinnett. He is VP of the NFB of Hawaii and president of the Honolulu chapter. And his wife, Katie Keim, who is secretary of the National Federation of the Blind of Hawaii and the convention coordinator for the state affiliate. Welcome back, Katie and Virgil. It is great to see you. Thanks for doing Helping Hand again.
Thank you, Dave.
Thank you for inviting us again this year.
It's a huge pleasure, and I'm really grateful that you guys would be back. And this is an organization that, when it comes, Virgil, to the mission and background of the NFB of Hawaii, for people maybe who are tuned in today who are blind and not part of the organization, new to it, perhaps with a new diagnosis, Virgil, or other vision challenges that they're facing and it's new in their lives, or their loved ones who might be tuned in, fill us in on the mission and the background of the NFB.
Well, we're here to basically educate folks out there, blind or even sighted family members of blind people, that blindness is not the end of the road. It's just another path and direction into just another way of living your life. And our theme this year for our state convention is raising expectations and building the federation. So I think it kind of works out. It's raising expectations to our community and our members and other blind people out there, knowing that just because you become blind, it's not the end of the world. And there is truly light at the other end of the tunnel. You know, I've been at this, come Thanksgiving this year will be 22 years that I've been blind. So it's, and I get around and do very well for myself. My wife is also blind, Katie, and she could speak for herself.
You guys been, before you do, Katie, just my first question on what he said. How long have you known Virgil?
I've known Virgil just over 20 years, and we knew pretty quickly this was a lifetime partnership. And we've been married 20 years now.
We'll be 20 years August.
Oh, yes.
August. Oh, this month.
Well, congrats on that. That's right. A huge amount of time. And what do you, when you hear Virgil talk about the mission, the background, especially the feeling for this year at the convention and the way, you know, that you look at things with that phrase, what can you add to that, or what do you feel inside you wanted to add to that?
I think that the theme speaks for itself, as Virgil said, but raising expectations is really a strong and powerful statement, in that our mission in the National Federation of the Blind is sky's the limit. So in raising the expectations for ourselves and the community around us and our integration into community, to me, raising expectations is, what are all the different beliefs about what a blind person can or cannot do? And to me, there is no cannot. It's what you want to do, it's what you love to do, and what you dream to do. It's those personal aspirations. And building the federation is that no matter where I go in our country, and even in the world to some extent, but mostly in our nation, that there will always be another NFB member that will be there if I'm feeling alone and I'm feeling the pressures of the world that doesn't understand that blindness is a can-do, and I can reach out to anybody in the Federation, and that's my Federation family.
Also, the Federation believes, and part of their motto and theme is, live the life you want. And that's what we are basically all about is, you know, when we raise the expectations of blind people, we're telling you, letting blind folks know that the bar is set as high as you expect it. And if you set it as high as an inch off the ground, well, then that's your expectation. But we're saying sky's the limit and just go for it. The only difference of being blind is there's a... You have to think about what you're going to do. It's you're more focused in the direction that you're going. And, you know, sometimes it's just doing it a different way. But regardless, the end result is the end result.
Have you found that you, excuse me, have you found that you push yourself harder? I mean, when you say you've been blind for 22 years, and I've been privileged to get to watch you get around, and so I get an idea of the tenacity that you're talking about, the perseverance, the way that you don't take no for an answer. In a lot of ways, it reminds me of my mom. So when I think about the to be able to do that, do you have to push yourself harder to stay focused and do the things you're saying?
Yes. Sometimes it's 110, 210%
right.
More, only because... society out there is already have a different perspective and view of what your capabilities are. Even people around you, around us, that are not blind or even with other disabilities, they forget that we are very capable.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's... Yeah, I can imagine that that is a struggle, and it's very intense. It's you're extremely capable, and you go every year across the country to represent the organization on a huge level, and we'll talk about that in a second. First, I just was, as I go through some of these things that I think are important for people to hear, funding for the NFB of Hawaii comes from where?
Just donations from members and people in the community. Pretty much as we try to get it any way possible. We work hard at our fundraisings. Sometimes we fundraise at our national convention by selling Hawaiiana products, which also gets people to know who we are in Hawaii, in the Federation itself. You know, so it's a win-win on both sides. And the funds that we do raise, we then give back to blind folks or newly blind folks, and we take them and give them the experience of going to either a state convention or a national convention. And the national convention is a wonderful experience only because you have over 3,000 blind people in one place. And these people come from all walks of life. And, you know, they just get to see, well, wow, there's a lot of blind guys.
Right, you know, what's possible.
Yeah, and, you know, the thing is, you're seeing folks in there from tots all the way up to 90s. You know, you got all ages, and you watch them, every single one of them, all the little kids, running around. It's like they're living their life, but they're blind, you know. And so for these new folks that we try to take them and introduce them to our national convention, we want to show them that, hey, there is life.
It's empowered.
Beyond blindness.
Right.
There still is life.
Right. No, I know that. What were you going to say, Katie?
I was going to say all our donations are private donations through our fundraising efforts, through the community of donations, as well as bequests. We are not connected to government funding, because then we become regulated by other entities. And we are really proud of the fact that we're an organization of blind people, of blind leaders, and that we're speaking for ourselves and fighting for our own rights, as well as those who are blind. So we are of the blind is really important. Also, our national convention, I always like to say, if you drop me in the middle of a room with 10 people, it's life-changing. But you drop me in the middle of a room with 3,000 people that are blind, it's really life-changing.
Right.
It's
right.
A whole another dynamic of how that immersion process is absorbed and digested into an individual that has no clue that there's 50,000 blind members out there in the National Federation of the Blind across our country and some of our territories. It's pretty awesome to watch the life-changing experiences for our first-time members or guests that come join us at a national convention, let alone coming to our local state convention, which is about 50 people. That's life-changing for many people locally. And yet, as they come into our local organization, we like to help give them the opportunity to go have the greater experience nationally, because they get to see us in a bigger way and how it's life-changing for themselves as well as others.
Well, it's in Orlando, the national convention took place. It was just it was in July.
Correct.
And I was reading about its history at your website. And for folks, I'll give this out at the end too. But if you go to hawaii.nfb.org, you can learn about the history of it. And it's very humbling. It's grown from 16 representatives at the first one in 1940 to breaking the 1,000 mark in 1971, 1,000 attendees, as Katie was talking, Virgil was talking about 3,000, then 2,000 in 1988, by 1997, over 3,000, which these days is an average attendance, and as they were just talking about, the way that that can empower people. Can you recall your first experience at that, and maybe just something about it that kind of embodies I don't know, perhaps your own personal growth or just what that felt like?
You know, my very first experience was in 2000. And, you know, in 2000, I was only blind about 4 years. And it was awe-inspiring, and honestly, it was frightening.
Why?
Well, being new to blindness and then getting out there, and you know, it was the National Federation of the Blind of Hawaii that sponsored me that first year and said, we're going to send you to this convention. I'm like, sure, okay. You know, this was in Atlanta, Georgia. I have never been to Atlanta,
right,
Georgia.
Right, either have I.
Yeah.
Long way from Hawaii.
Exactly. You know, so to get over there, and it's like I'm amongst thousands of people, and I'm hearing all these tap, 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 and dogs, you know, guide dogs, and people tapping, and just, see, in a group of blind people, when we're at a convention, we all speak. You know, it's funny how when you go into buildings and places, when you get into an elevator, everybody shuts up, but not in a blind convention.
Mm-mm.
Everybody's saying, hi, what? Where are you from?
Right.
Okay. You know, so everybody's talking the whole way, you know, so because that's how we, you know, listen to our surrounding and communicate.
Sure.
We're always communicating because we can't see. We can't do the visual cues.
Right. So you amplify on the audio cues.
That's right.
I get it. Totally get it.
And so, you know, I think that first year, you know, I was trying to soak everything up.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you get, it's like being a sponge, you know, and you can only soak the sponge so much.
Yep.
And then it just, no matter what, it just can't hold it anymore.
I can imagine it was overpowering.
It was just so incredible. I'm like, I got, you know, after leaving that first convention, I'm like, gung-ho, I know I could do this. They got the same attitude I do.
I mean, that's part of what you're saying is the reason that you finance the trips for people who, just like you, I mean, they did it for you. They were like, this is going to help empower Virgil. And what you're talking about is this is what you're doing for anybody who's blind, who's listening, that needs this kind of boost.
We consider it an investment in the individual's life and their potential, not just an investment into the Federation.
Right.
We welcome people with open arms. We want to see them successful. And we always remember where we came from, whether we grew up with blindness or it came to us later in life like it did for Virgil and I. We were adults when blindness came to us. We did not know each other before blindness. And it wasn't necessarily blindness that brought Virgil and I together. It was actually the love of the ocean. And we were both figuring out how to do it as newly blinded people. And we're like, oh, this is how you paddle a canoe. This is how you go for a swim. But the blindness was another common element. I would say that anybody's first experience, whether at a local level convention or our national convention, it is pretty mind-boggling to imagine you're not the only person out there who's blind. And I know my first experience was at another state, and I was only 4 months into my blindness. And I went to a convention of the NFB that had 400 people, which was a lot to me at that point. I thought I was the only blind person on the planet. I was that much new into my blindness. And as I met different blind people, and I didn't even know how to get around, I had somebody that mentored me to learn how to use a cane, and I was struggling at that point. But I did it. I wanted to get out there and learn. I realized that everybody I met was just another person with the same kinds of life considerations that I'd had as a 36-year-old adult who'd been fully sighted and then was totally blind. They had the same considerations of their income, how to pay their rent, whether they have a roof over their head, whether they're married or not, who their next boyfriend, girlfriend's going to be, how their children are. I mean, all the things that create someone's quality of life. I went, oh, okay. These are all blind people talking about the same things I talked about before I was blind. Here I am now. But when I went to my first national convention of the National Federation of the Blind, I'd already been exposed a little bit at a smaller level. My first convention was in Louisville, Kentucky, and I actually I landed in Louisville, and I had some residual ocean water in my ears and became semi-deaf in both ears, so I kind of went into freak-out mode. And I could hear, but not. My ears kind of became a little bit infected. It cleared up, but I found my way through with a whole experience I didn't expect in my first convention. But I felt the power because everybody that wandered through there knew that everybody was capable, but if we needed any assistance, all you had to do was speak up. And it was other blind people that gave me guidance or directional cues that I wasn't fully gathering the way that I knew how to gather, because my ears had kind of shut down on me for a moment. It came back within the first few days, and then I felt the power of the organized movement of blind people, and I thought, just like Virgil, wow, look at what we can do for other blind people. Yeah. And Virgil and I had maybe been together at that point
6 years.
We'd been together, was it 6 years by then? No, it was 5 years by then. And
something.
So in that time frame, pretty new together as a couple. And we came back together even though we knew that our lives together was an important partnership. It was very personal. It moved beyond the personal to the greatness of what we could do as individuals in an organization.
To lead others, you're
saying. Correct. To mentor, to lead others. And yet we still needed a lot of leadership and mentoring ourselves, and we still do, even though we've been part of this now for 20 years together.
It's a lot of different when you talk about the strength in numbers, it's part, I mean, that's a distillation of part of what you're talking about.
Yes.
And an aspect of strength in numbers that we sort of briefly mentioned in the beginning is the Ho'opono, which is services for the blind. And again, we're talking with the National Federation of the Blind of Hawaii, and they have got an upcoming state convention September 28th, 29th, and 30th at the auditorium of Ho'opono at 1901 Bachelot Street in Honolulu. Can you explain how, for people curious, how, especially people with loved ones who are blind and they want to know more about these invaluable resources, and how there is strength in numbers when an organization like Ho'opono Services can interact with you? Explain like your relationship to them and how they work to help people who are blind.
That's a really good question, Dave. And I would say that a strong training center for the blind comes from a strong relationship and partnership with an organization of blind people, because an individual needs some good training in the core skills of blindness. So the long white cane, the travel skills, the communication skills through Braille and computers, the confidence building skills, and the personal home manager living skills, the cooking, the cleaning, those kinds of things, if they've not had that opportunity for that kind of training. And not all blind people have had that opportunity. So they're uncertain, or they don't lack the confidence that they can do that. Now, as individuals in the organization of the National Federation of the Blind, we all can support those individuals, and we can work one-on-one with them if needed, and we do at times mentor individuals in that way. But Hawaii is a very fortunate state to have one of only three state agencies that are government-funded for the blind that are rated excellent to do that kind of training for individuals who are blind. And Hawaii's Ho'opono became one of those because of the partnership with the National Federation of the Blind and our belief that it is important to have that kind of training center for blind people in our communities so that they can go have an immersion experience to get good training so they can go out and live the life they want and the life they dream about.
Like so Shell, your guy from last year, Shell Canton. That's exactly what he does, mobility instructor.
Exactly.
Yes. He's a trainer at the center there. Today, I think majority of their trainers are blind at Ho'opono.
I'm not hearing myself. There I am. It's an evolution of Ho'opono and the partnership with the National Federation of the Blind that the training center has the last of our sighted friends who I believe this year is retiring, and thus they're going to be seeking an instructor. And the qualifications aren't required to be blind, but the fact that now the ratio is changed to the director of the training center and the majority of the teachers are blind. When we first started this change and partnership, I don't remember, 10, 12, 15 years ago,
quite a while.
They were all teachers who were sighted. And there's nothing wrong with a sighted teacher. We have lots of sighted friends in the National Federation of the Blind. But the fact that a student can go there and see blind people successfully
teaching
blind people, being directors and managers and instructors and living lives as blind people is a powerful, powerful tool in the education of a blind person and their own ability.
Right. That evolution you're talking about is kind of speaks for itself about with like your aspirations. When you talk about not setting the bar high, you look at the Ho'opono evolution of who's running it. I mean, unless I'm interpreting those changes wrong, it shows that what you're saying is true, that there is not a limit. And in fact, the best people in some cases who could be teaching others are going to be people who are blind.
Correct.
Well, you know, the interesting thing is before Ho'opono went through its change. It was a program in those days. It was still a needed program, but it was a program in the days that what we call the old medical model. So it's, they're not students, they're clients.
Right.
You know, just that thinking right there, we switched from clients to students. So the mentality just changed the whole attitude.
I get it.
And, you know, the program then was only a few months and, you know, they had a lot of repeats because people had to come back for services. With this style of program, structured discovery, it basically takes a blind person and they go through, run them through this program that here in Ho'oponopono, I believe it's a whole year. So it takes 12 months for them to go through their program. And the belief is once they get the full training, then you could take that person and put them anywhere in the world and they could figure it out and problem solve for themselves where they are mm-hmm. and how to get from place to place.
It's very, it's humbling stuff. It really puts...
The staff is part of the requirement of their job is they actually go through training. And I believe Shell mentioned this last year, but to reiterate, it's why it doesn't matter if you're blind or sighted. It levels the playing field in that all the staff are trained as instructors under the blindfold or what we call sleep shades. They learn to use the long white cane. They learn to do everything as if they are blind themselves. And thus then they can really teach and impact those that come to them for training. It's a great partnership between the National Federation of the Blind and Ho'opono, and yet we serve two purposes.
Right.
There is life after the training center, and that's the National Federation of the Blind, where you can come and be with other blind people and continue to grow and learn.
No, you explain it well, and I like that. That's what I, after having met Shell and heard mm-hmm. what he does, and he speaks well about it himself, mm-hmm. so I could understand. I mean, it's nice to see the relationship between the two and how one complements the other.
It's taken a while, Dave. It really has.
Well, just like she said with the evolution, right? That was a whole process, too.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
it was some work.
we fought tooth and nail, and it was... you know, the thing is, the person that really wanted to change Ho'opono was former director. His name is Dave Evelyn. He retired. He's still here on the island, but he is a sighted man, and he truly believed that a blind person can truly accomplish something with the right training. And so he wanted to change this whole way of thinking of what the program was.
Right, what the training was itself.
Mm-hmm. In the days, mm-hmm. yes. And then he and his assistant, who was a counseling supervisor then, was her name was Leah Gruppen. Now it's Leah Diaz.
Right.
And she oversees the program now. But they reached out to the NFB and said, hey, we're going to have issues when it comes to trying to make this change. So we're going to need your assistance in supporting us. So we did. And, you know, you look at the program today, and the funniest thing is it's only like 2 years into their change after they've become the program they are today. I had somebody approach me and and ask me, are there more blind people in Hawaii than anywhere else? And I told them, no, it's because they have an incredible program and blind people are not hidden away. They are taught to take public transportation, get out there and walk, be independent. That's why you're seeing it, because of that training program.
When I first came to the islands or returned to the islands, because I became blind while I was living here and I went back to family at that point on the mainland and went to a training program there. When I returned here to come back to work and rebuild my life, I had someone who was an instructor at the time think that I was an anomaly in my ability to get around independently as a blind person. And that was an instructor at Ho'oponopono who's since retired. I am now just commonplace in Hawaii because of the partnership of the National Federation of the Blind and the services at Ho'oponopono in their training center. As Virgil said, blind people are not hidden away. They're just, everybody has the opportunity to get out and be in the world because of good training.
It's a very inspiring story, and meeting Shell was certainly that way. And it's when you talk about that benefit of having the empowerment that comes from a national convention is the same kind of empowerment that comes from having a relationship with Ho'oponopono. It's the same sort of thing that when you gather people locally for the state convention can happen. On the flip side of the empowerment and the things that you're going to do at this convention to help people and to empower folks and to show them how you've been able to overcome the things that you have. I do this thing to also provide help, as you know. So yes. I want to talk about ways people can help you because that's why I do it. You know, helping hand. I want to find a way for people listening. So there, people can make a donation at their website, hawaii.nfb.org. When I saw, I went through the process. It goes through the national site when you make a donation on your local web page. Do those funds come back to you somehow, or how does that work?
They do. They come through grants and programs for our state. We have so many different programs that we try to put together, and with the national, we'll reach out to them and say, okay, we want this, and then they bring in all the expertise here, and then we put a package together, and then we get the people. And there's a program called the Bell Program, which is teaching children to read Braille, and teaching them the importance of Braille. And they start from, you remember Aurelia?
Mm-hmm. The young girl.
Yes. From her age and on to teenage years. You know, so it's a great program. And it really is to show them that Braille is still truly important for communication. And so that's one of the programs. And then we have many other programs throughout the country here in Hawaii. One of them is called Newsline for the Blind.
Right.
And Newsline for the Blind, it's not really just for the blind. It's for anybody that's
visually impaired or wants to have the news read to them.
Print disabled.
Okay, that's the word.
Okay, so they're print disabled, then they qualify for this free service where you could get access to either telephonic through the phone, you have hundreds of newspapers across the country here in Hawaii, the Star Advertiser and the Garden Island paper read to you over the phone or through an app now. Or via email, they could send you an email with all the stories, the newspapers, magazines, everything from Home Gardening, The Economist, you know, Sports Illustrated, you name it. We have quite a few magazines and some international magazines. So it's a great free program for people that are print disabled.
And that's paid for, though, using the donations from that the NFB gets?
Partly. Some of that goes into.
But to be clear, if people are making a donation locally, you want them, so is your preferred method they donate at your website, which goes to the NFB?
Actually, we have a few different ways, and our website currently, Dave, is going through some changes, and so it's not fully updated to reflect our local process of donation, because you can donate locally as well as nationally, and then nationally funds come back through in program-specific
ways,
correct.
Kind of like what Virgil was saying.
Correct. Whereas if it comes in directly, locally, then the local organization determines best programs and services between the education scholarship for new members or for higher education. We give out annual educational scholarships to college students or high school students getting ready for college at our local state convention. That's one of the places that local donations would support.
And people, at conversely, I don't know if that's the right word, but at that thing, people can also make a donation locally is also what I'm saying.
Like,
correct. So if somebody comes to the convention, that's one way to have the money come right to you. And you're
correct.
Saying you're going to, even. And I noticed the website looks a lot better since the,
right.
So, but you're saying they're going to make it so that somebody could donate right to the Hawaii chapter?
Correct.
Yes.
Okay.
We're working towards making sure whether it's a PayPal account that
something
connects to,
I get it,
towards our affiliate account.
So it would be the local affiliate rather than the national organization.
Correct.
But if people want to donate who are hearing this and they want to donate at the NF at the one that's on your website, you still advocate that?
Yes.
Yes.
And
but we prefer that they call us or email us and then we could get them another way to do it.
Okay. Right. Oh, that's, that makes sense too. Or right. Or my suggestion, is it a good or bad one if they want to come to the convention and make a donation?
Oh, no, that's a great way.
Okay. That's awesome.
Okay. And one of the things that we've actually worked on and we use this year for the first time is, because the world has moved to plastic, we now accept credit cards, but it will be on our website for donations soon through a credit card. But we have credit card readers that we do fundraising with or receive donations through, as well as checks and bequests. One of the programs that we've established nationally, and this helps build the Federation, is the Dream Maker Circle. And this is really more for end of life, not while you're alive. And we're not saying go off and crawl in a corner.
Right.
But we receive bequests, and it might be that someone doesn't have a lot of money, but they believe strongly in the National Federation of the Blind. They can leave their bank account, and it may end up with $200 at the end of their life. Well, then it can go into the Dream Maker Circle donations, which are nationally received, and promote the programs of every state and local chapter.
And those are valuable things for other nonprofits. Our radio
correct.
Station, HPR, actually has the same sort of,
correct.
You know, so everything you just said is something that I'm sure people who are listening
right.
are familiar with as a mm-hmm. as a method.
I think the common term these days is legacies.
Something like that.
Something right. like that, but we call it our Dream Maker Circle donations. I believe our mailing address is on our website right now. We're in the midst of upgrading it, making it local as well as national information, but definitely the convention is a way to come to us with donations or contact us via email and phone number, and we'll make it happen.
And I'll have that information in just a moment, but before that, are there other ways that that people can help, that people can support you, that you want to get out there while you have their attention?
Well, while we're building our website, we're always looking for good tech-savvy folks to
here we go.
assist us in, building and restructuring our website.
There is a great way to help them, and you've come a long way, though. In the
yes.
in the 5 years, I think it's been that we've been doing this now, or
it's
four
five.
Years, 5 years. Yeah, it's that thing has come a long way, and it looks really sharp. And you can learn a lot of humbling details about, like I was talking earlier, about the history of the National Convention and the numbers and how that's increased. And there's lots and lots more mm-hmm. information. But that's an incredible asset that somebody volunteering could do without having to part ways with cash. If you are good with a website and you know how to administer and help work on a website, you'd be doing the National Federation of the Blind of Hawaii a huge solid to assist. And they've already got a good foothold. I'm very stoked about the progress that site has made. Another area before I hit your contact information, anything else on the ways that folks could assist you? I know the vehicle donation thing was not working real good last time. Is that up to snuff or not?
Not in Hawaii.
Good. Not in Hawaii. Any other ways that are tangible that you just want to get out there that...
One of the ways that crosses my mind, Dave, is people can reach out to us as individuals or groups. If a lot of times partnership and community service is an important value within individuals and organizations' lives, it's in our organization's mission and reality. If they want to reach out to us, we have different local events that we participate in, and we love volunteers to participate with us. It might be as simple as, it's been a few years, but we used to do car washes, and it was great to have people come and car wash with us. And we needed extra bodies. We're not a huge organization, but we need bodies to help us car wash on a Saturday to raise funds for the organization. But if those kinds of partnerships, we've partnered with Lions, with Rotary, with Kaimuki Neighborhood in the past for different fundraising events. But if they wanted to reach out and help in that kind of volunteer, or they wanted to have us participate in their organization's outreach to the community, we're quite open to partnerships from individuals as well as organizations.
We're always happy to, like Katie mentioned, partner up with other organizations or just anybody. If they want to learn more about us, they could reach out to us, and we would be more than happy to come out and talk about who we are, what our programs are, and what kind of benefits are there that can assist blind people in the community. And we're always hoping that there, because we know there is a greater number of blind people out there that are not in the system only because they, whether it's themselves or families, don't know how to reach out.
Right.
Well, we're there. And, you know, we say, reach out. We're out there. We live the life the way we want, and we live it pretty well and comfortably. You know, every blind person can do that, and they could do it independently. And so if you know somebody that's blind, feel free to give us a call, and we'll be more than happy to reach out as long as we get a contact info to speak to the individuals.
One last thought I had on that also, Dave, is we have been invited before into the school systems, not just organizations, to come speak on blindness. We've been invited to business networking groups, and we are more than happy to go in, as Virgil said, and talk about blindness and the positive aspects of it and how we live our lives. And sometimes that comes from the fact that one person knows a blind person, or there's maybe one child in the school system and people don't understand it. So we come out as advocates and educators to those groups and organizations.
Oh, that's another valuable way that people can help. And that's a different kind of way and that's a cool way, because it does help to spread awareness. And through that is only a lot of more people who are aware of the challenges, and the way you can overcome the challenges is just more strength in numbers, really, as far as...
Correct.
Yes.
And our theme, again, this year is...
His mic. You got his mic? Go for it.
Our theme, again, this year for our state convention is raising expectation and building the federation.
Here's how you can get involved with these guys. And they will get in touch with you or your loved one who is blind, and they will provide some inspiration that only they can, and very powerful and positive force. It's hawaii.nfb.org is the website. You can call from Oahu 808-595-6123. Toll-free voicemail 866-595-6123. You can reach Virgil directly. 808-722-4243. You can send him an email, 808virgil@gmail.com, and that's V-I-R-G-I-L. You can get the full interview, the radio feature, all their contact information, and all of our previous Helping Hand guests archived at hawaiipublicradio.org. The state convention is September 28th, 29th, 30th, in Honolulu, 1901 Bachelot Street, in the auditorium of Ho'opono, Services for the Blind. And it's a privilege to have on Helping Hand, again, the National Federation of the Blind of Hawaii, and Virgil Stinnett, VP of the NFB of Hawaii and president of the Honolulu chapter of the National Federation of the Blind of Hawaii, and his lovely wife, Katie Kime, secretary of the NFB of Hawaii and the convention coordinator for the state affiliate. And
I have one last thing, and we've said this every year, Dave, but regarding our state convention,
yes,
we welcome people. We have a registration fee of $50 that helps support the food and the cost of it. But if someone finds that they want to come and $50 is a stretch, please reach out to us, because we do scholarship people to our convention, and we welcome newcomers. Please do not let that be a barrier to you reaching out to us and talking to us.
Exactly. Costs should not be your deterrent.
That's a pretty warm welcome. And again, you can make a donation at the convention as well to
yes.
support the organization. I appreciate you guys doing what you do. And you're you know, extraordinary helping hand guests. It's always like, you know, always puts me well in my place. It's a real, I would say empowering, instructive, humbling time when I get to do this with you. Thank you, because I know that you're probably inspiring a lot of people to get through tough times. So, and to just face challenges and then to rally behind them and then have them just be regular times. So mm-hmm. thanks for your tenacity, your courageousness, and your persistence. It's something else. I really, really appreciate it.
Thank you very much for inviting us, and it's always an honor and a privilege when you do invite us for this yes. program once a year, and it's we truly appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Dave. It's become a family time annually to be with you and Studio Bill over there in the corner, but we really appreciate the time and energy both of you put into the Hawaii Public Radio. Thank you.